Hello, my name is Paul. I'm an addict.
Hi, Paul.
And it's great to be here. I thought I wouldn't know anyone at this meeting because I don't live in London. I live about 100 miles away. And although I did start my using in London, I didn't finish it in London. But I've just seen loads of faces that I recognise and people that I know. And that's fantastic for me, you know. I really sort of want to thank the previous speaker because... you know, Debbie really reminded me what I'm doing here, because I can forget, you know, I can really forget what I'm doing in life. I can forget what I'm doing in an NA meeting, you know. I can forget where I came from, and I can forget why I'm here. And so I'm here to share my experience, strength and hope. And I will try not to talk about drug using, because I believe that if you're in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, you don't need to hear about drug using. You know all about drug using. You know, what I wanted to do when I came to NA wasn't to hear about drugs. I wanted to hear about not using drugs. So I'll try and avoid all that kind of stuff, because I really don't think it's relevant. I know lots of recovering addicts, and they all used, you know, drugs, and they all, you know, did the sort of things that I did. Some of the details were different, but I believe that, you know, everyone I've met in NA used the same way that I did, even if they didn't use the same drugs or in the same places. You know, that the using was kind of, there was a reason why I used, and it seems to be pretty similar to most other people's. And that's what I first identified with when I first came to Narcotics Anonymous. I was amazed at the fact that I met people who were not using and were happy about it. And I'd never met anyone who wasn't using and was happy about it before in my life. I'd used for a lot of years, and I'd tried to stop using, and I'd been in various places where I got help with stopping using drugs, and I managed to beat every single one of them. You know, there was people with letters after their name, and there were sort of religious people, and there were people who ran institutions, and all of them did their best to try and help me stop using drugs, and I managed to defeat every single one of those people. You know, they just couldn't do it. They couldn't beat my addiction, and I couldn't beat my addiction either. And so when I came to NA, I was pretty well defeated, you know, defeated by addiction. I didn't want to use, and I couldn't stop using. And I'd had, you know, I'd done the sort of things that a lot of addicts do. I'd been to institutions. I had three children by different mothers. They'd all been taken away from me. I lost my family. I was registered disabled. I was... judged to be unemployable. I was also a registered drug addict. You know, I mean, I had all these kind of labels on me that all said hopeless case. That was me, you know. And I came to NA as a hopeless case, and I met people who were far more hopeless cases than me, and, you know, and were clean and getting on with life and having a great time. And, you know, initially that really annoyed me at first, because I thought I was the worst, you know. And that was what kept me going for the last few years of my using, the fact that I thought I was the most desperate, the worst, you know, the most hopeless. And I was quite proud of the fact that I was a career addict, and even better, a career hopeless addict, you know. And I had the bits of paper to prove it, you know. And I came to NA, and people said, yeah, I did that, and then I did this. And I went, damn, you know. And then I thought, oh, well, okay, maybe there's some hope for me here. And the first thing I got when I came to NA was hope. I didn't get clean, but I got some hope. And it took me about 18 months of going to NA meetings before I managed to get more than 24 hours clean. Because I'm a very slow learner, you know. But once I actually managed to get more than 24 hours clean, I didn't use again. And I went from, you know, right from being obsessed with the getting and using and what finding ways and means to get drugs, I turned into someone who was obsessed with the not getting and not using and not finding ways and means to get drugs. My head did this 180 degree sort of spin, and I became just obsessed with Narcotics Anonymous, you know, which was actually a really healthy thing. Now I look back at it, I'm really glad about that, you know, because I had nothing else to do. You know, it wasn't like I had a really full appointment diary or anything, you know. I mean, my life was completely empty. And so I did what was suggested. I filled it up with NA. The place where I got clean was a sort of small city where there was one NA meeting a week. And that was on a Sunday. And I used to go to this NA meeting. And and I got a service position, and I got a sponsor. It was really hard for me to get a sponsor because there was nobody who was as old as me or who'd used as long as me or who was as desperate as me, or, you know, no one was as well qualified as me. So there was no one who could be my sponsor, you know. No one just matched up to my requirements. So it took me a really long time to get a sponsor, you know. So first I had to get some humility, and what I did was I chose somebody to be my sponsor who said they would be my temporary sponsor till I found one who was, you know, good enough to be my permanent sponsor. And I thought this man obviously has enough humility to sponsor me, you know, because he understands what a hopeless case I am, and you know what a sponsor I'm going to need here. So he's willing to just do the job for a little while till the real one comes along, you know. And that man saved my life, you know. I mean, he absolutely saved my life. This guy, you know, he was 18 months clean, and he took me to meetings in other towns because the nearest meeting was 60 miles away from where I got clean. So we'd go like 60 miles one night, and we'd go 80 miles the next night, and we'd go to London. And he'd just drive me all over the place and take me to meetings, you know. And fantastic, you know. He took me to my first convention. He took me to the first London convention in Holland Park School when I was 90 days clean. And having been to these little meetings where there were six people, we went to Holland Park, which was somewhere that was kind of known to me in my using, and the school, and then like abandoned me after 15 minutes, and I was suddenly in this place with all these drug addicts and 90 days clean and completely obsessed. So I spent the first hour walking from one end of it to the other, pretending I was going somewhere, you know. And after about an hour, I saw somebody that I'd seen at a meeting somewhere else, and I kind of grabbed onto them like a limpet, you know. And they sort of said, "It's all right, Paul. You don't have to worry about being self-obsessed, because everyone else is far too self-obsessed to be looking at you." And the penny dropped, you know, and I felt okay then, you know. And that was like the first convention I went to, and I love conventions. I go to every convention I can. I just love them, because I love that feeling of just being amazed by all these recovering drug addicts, you know, being amazed by how many of us there are and how this program works. And I'm a slow learner, and I need a lot of convincing, you know, and seeing a load of people who are obviously clean and happy about it is a good convincer for me. You know, I need burning bushes, you know, I need sort of lights in the sky and stuff, you know. And that's what I get at conventions, you know, I get that kind of power, you know. The other thing my sponsor said was, you need to start working the steps. And I was willing to go along with that, so I started working on step one, and I started working on step one, and I did my best at it, and he made me write this stuff down. He said it would be a good idea if perhaps I considered writing some stuff down, and I felt like I was being made to, so I did. And it was incredible, really, because I had spent years telling lies, not telling the truth, cooking up different stories. And what he said was, all you have to do is write down the reality of your using. That's a good way to start step one, the reality of your using. And I said to him, I'll do my best, what does reality mean? And you know, I know it sounds funny, but I was 38 years old, and I really didn't understand what the word was. And my sponsor really lovingly said to me, reality is what is. And I remember that so well, because I'd spent my whole life trying to live what was not, you know, and make up the story about what was not, and, you know, say what hadn't really happened, and so on. And so my first introduction to reality, honestly, was in Narcotics Anonymous. And I was really afraid of that, because I had been told for many years that anything I said would be taken down and maybe used in evidence against me. So I was a bit worried about writing down the truth, you know. But I was going to do it, you know. And it wasn't like I was a big bad criminal or anything like that. But I got into trouble, and, you know, I was afraid. I was just afraid. And so I started working the steps. And I haven't stopped yet. I had this idea that when I started working the 12 steps, that they were like this ladder. And what you did was you did step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And when you got to 12, you got a certificate, you know, like this diploma, recovered, You know, like I got this big pink prescription which said registered drug addicts on the top, my diploma, you know. I thought, I get this, like, that was it. I'd have worked the steps, recovered. I could, I don't know what next, you know, become a sponsor, become the chairman of NA. I had no idea what, you know, but I mean, that's, I had this idea that there was some kind of payoff, you know, some, like, milestone. And that hasn't really worked out like that, to be honest. I mean, the payoff has been continual. Every time I, you know, do some work on the steps, I get a huge amount back. That's how it works. You know, I get more than I believe is possible from working the steps. But I'm still kind of working them. I'm still working around them. When I got to the end of step 12, I got another sponsor and I said, what do I do? And he said, you start with step one. And I'm on my third sponsor now and I'm working around the steps the third time. And that doesn't mean I work them very fast. I work them very slow. Sometimes I work them so slow, you'd be hard pressed to see me making any movement whatsoever. But I do work them, you know. I mean, because, you know, that's what I was told when I came here. You know, my sponsor said, you work the steps, Paul. You know, that's what keeps us clean. It's not a meetings program, and it's not a service program, and it's not a fellowship program. It's a 12-step program. So you work the 12 steps. That's what keeps us clean. All the other stuff is great, you know, and I love it. But so that's what I do, and I'm really lucky that I can do that. Every time I kind of come to a step, it's different to last time. It's a bit harder and it's a bit easier, and that's what I know really. But when people say the steps are our solution, my experience is that is true. You know, the steps are my solution. My solution from my problems, my solution from me, the things that actually help me to get away from my disease, because I need to put some distance between me and my disease. You know, I am a recovering drug addict. I have the disease of addiction. I am under no illusions about that. You know, I have this disease. I believe it will always be with me, but I need to put some distance between it and me. You know, I don't want it in my ear all the time. I don't want it in my head all the time. I don't want it in my house. Don't want it in my life, you know. So I have to do that, and that's what the steps do, and nothing else works. Nothing else works for me. Having said that, because I became obsessed with, you know, with recovery, I threw myself into stuff like service and stuff like fellowship and stuff like going to conventions. And at one time, I had a chest of drawers completely full of T-shirts. And now I've kind of just given them away because I'm not going to live that long, you know, to wear all those T-shirts. I just had to have, you know that, I don't know if anyone else does this, but do you ever think, I must have one of those? And I must have one of those. Oh, and I haven't got that one, you know. And, I just went mad, you know. But I believe that picking up T-shirts was a lot better than picking up drugs, you know, so that was okay. When I first went to NA, there wasn't this smoking ban. In fact, there was kind of, it was like compulsory if you were in NA to smoke all the time, especially in meetings. And one of the things they said to me was, you know, what you need is a service commitment, do some service, get involved, pick up the ashtrays. And that was great because the ashtrays had some pretty choice dog ends in them, you know. So that's what I did. You know, I picked up the ashtrays. And after 90 days of being clean, I got bronchitis. I'd sit in meetings. I would just cough and cough and cough and cough. So I couldn't smoke. You know, I couldn't smoke. And I have no opinion about tobacco at all, except that I'm really glad that I gave up smoking at 90 days clean. You know, and I don't do that anymore. Because it's just, you know, I can be addicted to anything, you know, anything you got. What have you got? I'll be addicted to it, especially something I ain't done before, you know. And I need to change, you know. And that was a really good thing for me, being, you know, and I realized that actually there are lots of things that are dangerous for me to do, you know, just for me, things that are dangerous for me to do. And I try and stay away from them, you know. It's not drugs, it's people, places and things. They're my problem. You know, putting down the drugs, I can honestly say, hand to my heart, was reasonably easy. You know, I mean, I was good at it. I've been doing it for years, you know. I mean, I've done it in all kinds of places. I've done it in mental hospitals, in stripy pajamas. I've done it locked up in cells. I've done it on a stinking mattress in a squat. You know, I was an expert at giving up. You know what I mean? I've done it so many times. So, you know, it wasn't like when I did my last putting down the drugs completely that it was particularly hard. It was just the last time I did it. That's all, you know. And the difference was that I believed that it was possible for it to be the last time for me, and I hadn't ever believed that before. And I got that not because of some belief in myself, but from you, you know, from the members of Narcotics Anonymous in the meetings who said, you can do this, Paul, you know. If we can do it, you can do it. And my first thought was, oh, I'll show you. No, you can't. And my second thought was, all right, maybe I'll give it a go, you know. And my third thought was, this is great. I love this. I love this. I have no desire to use. I have no desire to use drugs. Just for today, I have no desire to use drugs. I am not obsessed by drugs, and I have no compulsion to pick them up. And I don't care that's being recorded, you know. That's today. Today is the 4th of January 2008, and in a few weeks' time, 2 weeks' time, if I stay clean, I will have 18 years clean. You know, that's it, you know what I mean? But it's only a day at a time, you know what I mean? I remember that. And I spent some time with my present sponsor last week. My present sponsor lives in America, and I said to him, he's got like 24 years clean on the 8th of January. And I said, you know, couldn't we exchange tokens? Because, you know, we're not going to see each other on anniversaries. And he said, nope, you don't do that. It's a day at a time, Paul, you know. And that's right, it's a day at a time. That's why I've got a sponsor. I'd very much like to have that man give me a token and hug me and say congratulations, but I'm not 18 years clean. You know, and I mean, and I need to have someone who's got more time than me and more experience than me tell me how it is and tell me how it works, because in my own head I can start cutting corners and I can start swerving and saying it's only this and it's only a little bit of that and it's only a few days and you know, because I'm still an addict and I still have this mad disease, you know. So when you know, I need that help, you know, I need that help more than ever, really. So that's my experience of getting to NA. And if anyone here is new, don't be new. You know, keep coming back and don't be a new person, you know, be a someone who is here all the time, you know, be a sort of familiar face. That's what you need to be in here, because it's better to be a familiar face than a new person, honestly, you know. And the more you come, the less a new person you will be, and then you will have a new life and your life will be better. And that is true. That's the promise of NA. Since I got clean, work the steps, do service. Something profound that happened to me at the first London convention, which was quite central to my decision that I was going to become a member of Narcotics Anonymous, was that they read out those reading cards in this huge, great meeting, you know, and they read that bit that said, there is one thing more than anything else that will defeat us in our recovery. And someone at the back shouted, relationships. And I thought, yes, this is, I'm in the right place, you know what I mean? This is, because, you know, because it was true, you know what I mean? That was, you know, I would always, you know, use on a relationship, you know what I mean? Or use, I didn't have a relationship, or whatever, you know what I mean? That's what I was like. And I was always in three relationships at once. I was in the one that I had my heart broken in that I wasn't in anymore. I was in the one that I was in at the moment. And I was in the one that I was looking to get into as soon as this one went wrong, you know? And you know, that was a hard thing to do, you know? I mean, I needed the drugs to be able to keep all those balls in the air, you know what I mean? And so I came into NA, and I discovered that relationships could be with a cat or, you know, or with your mum, you know, and it didn't have to be incestuous, you know what I mean? That it meant much more than just sex and having your heart broken and feelings and all that stuff and probably having kids on the way. And so, you know, I, as well as not knowing what reality meant, I honestly didn't know what relationships were either, you know? And I spent my first year really praying to be in one and my second year really praying to be out of one. And in my third year, I met a woman who was about 6 months clean longer than me, and she wasn't in a relationship, and I wasn't in a relationship, and so we got into a relationship. a friendly one, and we became friends. You know, we would kind of go out for coffee. I don't drink coffee. We go out for coffee. I don't understand this coffee stuff. I haven't drunk coffee for 17 years. I still go out for coffee every night after a meeting. You know, went out with I don't understand words very well. You see, I went out with her with a bunch of other people after a meeting, and you know, we slowly got to know each other. We both got service positions at the same meeting, and after about 6 months, she said to me, look, you know, I really like you, and I really think you're a good friend. I really admire your recovery. I really like to take our, you know, our relationship to the next stage. And I just went to pieces, you know. And I said, look, can we talk about this tomorrow, please? Yeah. And she said, okay. And that was it. I was frozen, you know. I literally, I was like a block of ice. If you had hit me with a hammer, I would have gone ching, you know. I was just like completely rigid with fear. And she said, well, can you hug me goodbye or something, you know. I did one of those, you know, there's no contact hugs that we do in NA, you know. We actually, you put your arms around each other, but you don't in fact touch each other, you know. Did one of those. I was good at that. And and I said to my sponsor, you know, there's this terrible situation's happened, oh sponsor, what am I going to do, you know. And he said, well, what do you want to do, Paul? It's time for you to make a decision now. And so I kind of said, yeah, okay, we'll do this. And so we went on dates together. We went to the pictures together. I was 42 years old. I'd never been on a date with a woman. You know, we held hands. And you know, at the beginning of a meeting where you, you know, when you're new, you do that because you know they're going to do the serenity prayer in about half an hour's time. You know, well, I was like that with the hand-holding stuff, you know, kind of sweaty hands, you know, sweaty brow. Terrible fear, you know. And and it was amazing, really, because it didn't matter that I was so inept. It didn't matter that I was so afraid. It didn't matter that I really didn't know anything about relationships at all, because, well, we got married. And yesterday we celebrated 13 years being married. And she's still got 6 months clean longer than me, which, which, you know, most of the time I love, and occasionally I really hate, you know. I mean, but, you know, that's how it is. That's what relationships are like for me today. They're all kinds of different things, you know, and they're not what I thought they were. And that's the thing. Even my marriage is not what I thought it was. And every year I do a kind of review, and I realise that, well, actually, what I thought it was last year, it's changed, and it's different. And I believe it changes because I change, and my wife changes. You know, and we have managed to accept each other's changes, and that's great. And the other thing is we both work different programs, and we don't spend a lot of time trying to sort each other out, which is really miraculous, I have to say, you know, and a great thing, you know. We still go on dates. We have both incredibly busy lives, and so once a week we get our diaries out, and we work out when we're going to go out on a date together. And it works. It works. It wasn't something that I thought of. It was something that we went to a marriage guidance place a few years into our marriage and said, what do we do? And they said, well, why don't you, instead of doing all this, you know, flying around the world and being in meetings and being on committees and all this stuff, why don't you go out together sometimes? Oh, yeah, what a great idea, you know. I know how to go on a date. We had one 6 years ago, you know, and so this is what we do. We get, you know, we do this stuff. So, I mean, you know, from being a member of NA and coming here and being willing to take advice, I've learned that, you know, I can go to other places and I can get advice. So a lot of people can give me the advice I need. I'm willing to accept help these days, albeit grudgingly, you know, and sometimes as a last resort I will accept help, but I will accept it, and when I get it, I generally get what I need. I said about, you know, flying around the place. I got involved in service in NA through emptying the ashtrays, and, you know, and that gave me bronchitis, so I decided I'd better do something else. And so I did the sort of, you know, literature person, secretary at a meeting. They have all this alphabet soup in Narcotics Anonymous, you know, and I did most of the letters that you do in NA. And I loved it. I just loved it. I love being involved. I love the fact that when I do service in Narcotics Anonymous, what I get to do is I get to meet up with people who have got more time and more experience than me, and they share it with me. And I love that. You know, I mean, I just remind you that I come from a small town where there was only one meeting a week, and now we have 6 meetings a week. Well, we had 7, but one folded, and we're just going to start another one, so we'll have 7 a week again. So we all know each other's stories really well, and it doesn't take long to become an old timer. And that's a dangerous place to be. You know, the first time someone called me an old timer, I looked behind me because I thought, oh, hang on, this is some kind of, you know, insult they say to people, you know. Because I don't want to be that, you know. I want to have the excitement and the enthusiasm for Narcotics Anonymous I had when I first come in. And that's important to me. It's really important to me. So I love the fact that when I'm doing service with other people, there's a bunch of old timers and there's me. You know what I mean? And that's great, you know what I mean? That's great. That's because that's who I'm supposed to be. I'm still little Paul, you know what I mean? I'm still this bloke asking questions and saying, well, how do you do this and what's that? And I get the answers. And so I generally sort of, I'm the one who tries to make people laugh, because that seems to be my role, not the old wise one, but the, you know, the young kind of, you know, kid who fools around a bit, you know. And some of the places I've been to do service have been extraordinary, really. I was asked to go and do a chair in a prison in Russia a few years ago when I was in Russia, and because I do H&I service, and that's what I've always done. I love institutions. I loved them when I was using. They were great, you know, 3 meals a day in clean pajamas. Loved it, you know. So I mean, I have this real affinity for H&I. You know, I mean, you put me behind a door and lock it, and I'm okay. You know what I mean? I'm all right with that. Especially if you're going to unlock it when I say please afterwards. That's progress for me, you know. First time I went to an H&I meeting, at the end of the meeting, this prison officer opened up the bars, the gates. I opened the door and he said, good night, sir, thank you very much. And I thought, yeah, I'll be back, you know. I mean, just keep calling me sir, you screw, you know what I mean? That's, you know, yeah, fantastic, you know what I mean? Beyond my wildest dreams, stuff like that, you know. And anyway, H&I service, I got asked to do this. I was in St. Petersburg in Russia, and it was February, it was 14 below. And I got asked by these Russian addicts if I'd go and do a chair in the local jail. And and I said, all right, because I could think of no good reason why not to. And I went along to the local jail, and it was just like Wormwood Scrubs. I mean, it could have been built by the same brickies, you know what I mean? It was the same architecture and everything, you know? Anyway, just as an aside, and I went in, and we went through all these kind of snowy kind of corridors and stuff, and eventually I wound up in the governor's office, the guy who ran it. And the guy who ran it was a psychiatrist and a doctor and a really sort of high up bloke, and he told me through an interpreter that the reason why he was really glad that NA went in was because his son was an addict and his son had died of the disease. And I felt incredibly emotional. I think that's it. I couldn't put my finger on one emotion I felt, but I felt really kind of masala, I suppose, a whole mixture of different emotions churned up by this thing, you know, this thing. And he said to me, I'm really glad you're here, you know, and he said, through an interpreter, the men you will be meeting are men who have all committed capital offences while under the influence of drugs, and they are here before they are sent off to do their sentences. And, you know, a life sentence is a life sentence. So, and then I got taken off to this room by, you know, guards you wouldn't believe. And there were some men in this room. There were 6 men in this room. And they said, you know, we have nothing left. All we have is possibly a better life by staying clean. How do we do it? And I didn't know what to tell them except to say, do what suggested Narcotics Anonymous. I was just so humbled, you know. I mean, I was almost, you know, I feel quite sort of tearful now remembering those guys, you know what I mean? And they had nothing left in their lives except perhaps the possibility of staying clean and so their life being better for the rest of their lives. And they thought they would find it in Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, I would love to go back there. You know, I would love to go back there to see those guys, you know. I mean, I'm really glad that NA is in places where, you know, where it's really needed, you know. I know it's needed everywhere, but I was at a convention earlier this year with a load of addicts from Iran, and they were telling me how they have 10,000 members of Narcotics Anonymous in Iran. It is the largest fellowship outside the US in Iran. And they said to me, please come to Iran, please, you know. And I thought, what have I got to give? You know what I mean? Why would I go there? You know, and what I've got is, I've got a love for Narcotics Anonymous and a willingness to share my love for it, and that's all I've got. You know, and if that will help somebody, then that's what I know. That's what I want to do. You know, and that's kind of what service is for me. And a lot of the service I've done has been, you know, kind of not that sort of front line going in the jail doing the stuff sort of thing. It's been about, you know, writing things. I got educated in Narcotics Anonymous. I learned how to write a GSR report, you know, and I learned how to do that. Yeah, that was an education. I learned how to do that because, you know, I learned how to write a step one. And I done a step one, so I got voted GSR. It's funny how things work around here, isn't it? You get promotion really fast, you know, especially in a small group. And and then I got, you know, and as a result of that, I realised I could write stuff. And so I went to back to school and I went to college. And I did I became a Master of Science. And then I decided to do a Master of Arts degree because, you know, one's too many and 1,000 aren't enough. That's what they say around here. You know, and I did those things because I had a teacher, a headmaster, who said to me, Paul, you have the brains of an ox. You will never amount to anything. And just from that resentment, I spent 12 years in education, you know. I'm not an academic, you know. But, you know, I mean, but I'm an addict, and that's what I believe, that's what we do, you know, kind of, you know, it's like, go the extra mile, come on, you know, give me 10,000 kilometres, you know, that's what I'm like, you know. I've been so lucky in this fellowship because, you know, the children who were, you know, who I had, who were removed from my life, have been restored to me, and not just them, but their mothers as well. You know, through the sort of steps I've been able to make amends, my parents have been restored to me. You know, I was estranged from my parents, and you know, today they love me, and they, you know, they tell me they love me, and that's just great. You know, most of the time, sometimes it really pisses me off because they're not perfect, they're not the parents I wanted them to be, they're not ever going to be the parents I wanted them to be, but I've got to work on that because that's my problem. It's not their problem. They are who they are, you know, and they accept me for who I am today. I have more friends than I ever thought possible, you know. I have, there are so many people I know that are willing to say hello to me and to hug me. There are so many people in my life who care about me. Today I'm not registered disabled. Actually, what happened was when I was about 6 months clean, I thought, this is nonsense. I mean, I've got this kind of green card to say I'm disabled, and because I'm a drug addict and I haven't used for 6 months, so I'm not disabled. So I'll go and I'll become undisabled, you know. So I went along to the disability registration officer, I think that was his name, and I said, look, I'm not using drugs anymore, and so I'm not disabled anymore, so I don't want to, you know, I don't want this. Can you unregister me as disabled? And he kind of scratched his head, you know, because he said, people don't usually become undisabled around here, Paul, you know. And I really wanted to say, you know, Narcotics Anonymous and do this whole kind of ego-driven PI thing on my own, you know. And I said, well, you know, look, this is it, you know, I'm not using drugs and, you know, so on. And he said, okay, right, well, I'll do that. And he took my green card off me, which was my ticket to never having to sign on again, you know. And he said, and he took out this card out of his pocket, and he said, look, I really appreciate you doing this. However, if at any time you want to become disabled again, give me a call. And I haven't been back, you know what I mean? I mean, that's the miracle of this program, I've not been back, you know, yeah. I'm on the way to becoming a productive, responsible member of society on the outside. In my head, I'm still a mad axe murderer on a bad day. You know, I work for an institution which has, I work in a college, an institution, it sounds really grand. I work for a college. I have a part-time job. I work 3 days a week, and that's all I need to do. I just need to work 3 days a week. It's fantastic. And there are 1,000 staff who work in the college I work in, and to the best of my knowledge, I am the only recovering addict. So I'm still weird and different, you know, and I still have trouble doing the things that normal people do. I still have, you know, trouble with systems, you know. I still have real problems writing reports about students because you know, I don't want to be judgmental, which is nonsense. I'm a lecturer, I'm supposed to judge them, that's my job, you know. I get people telling me, you know, I get students telling me I'm trying to control them. Damn right, that's my job too, you know. You know, I have real trouble with like understanding the English language, you know, because I'm an addict and it's all twisted in my head. But, you know, I through this fellowship, through these rooms, through working the steps, through everyone I know in NA, I am learning that it is possible for an addict to actually have a better way of life and learn this stuff, you know, and not be the total screw-up that I was. And you know, I'm if it doesn't sound like I'm grateful, then, well, I am. Maybe I just don't sound it, but I am fantastically grateful. You know, I'm so grateful to all the people before me who, you know, actually got it together to have a meeting in the YMCA on a Sunday night in 1989 when I finally turned up. You know, I'm so grateful to all the things that happened to make that possible. I'm so grateful to anyone, everyone who's been in NA since I came to NA, because they show me what I need to do. You know, because I just don't know. I am not the best person to learn things. When I was a kid, I was obsessed with getting information because I wasn't big and I wasn't good at fighting and all that stuff. But I thought, well, if I could just like have loads of information, that would be my way to impress people. You know, that, so I used to read loads of books, and I used to read all these books called Teach Yourself books. You know, they used to be really popular. You know, Teach Yourself Plumbing, Teach Yourself Russian, Teach Yourself Fishing, Teach Yourself. You know, and you know what I learned? I learned I can't teach myself anything if I don't. You know what? If I don't know it, how on earth can I teach myself anything, you know? So I just, like, memorised all these books. And I came to NA and you know, and I found this book. And this book said, you know, by doing what's suggested in here, you can have a better life. And I used to hear people in the meeting say, this programme works. We don't know how it works, but it works. And so some really great people in NA wrote a book called It Works How and Why, to shut them up, you know what I mean? This is how it works, you know? And so I got, you know, that book's great, you know, it tells you how it works. If you don't understand the basic sets, read that one. And what I learned from that is that, you know, there is a power greater than me. I'm back, you know, I keep going back to this step. There's a power greater than me. I don't know what it is. I find it in these rooms. I haven't got a name for it, but I find it in these rooms. I find it with other addicts. You know, I find it in the world. I find it in all kinds of places. But there is a power greater than me that wants me to stay clean, have a better life, and wants everybody in Narcotics Anonymous, past, present and future, to stay clean, have a better life. And I never had that before. There was never a power greater than me. And that's what I've got, you know. That's what you all are. You are all that power greater than me. And thank you for being that. And thank you for letting me share.